This is the 1895 podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club, and someone that doesn't need an introduction, but you'll get one anyway. Chris Larry, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
First time we've done it this way, we've sat down, we've put the camera out, we had royalty coming, so we said we'd push out all the stops. Look, we'll start on Saturday. You were here for Rings and Derby against Rovers. Share the spoils in the end. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, probably looking back at it, it's probably a fair result. I think now we're getting to the stage where internally we're probably a bit disappointed that we're not turning 1 point into 3 points. But I actually do think Saturday was probably a fair result. Rovers had some good chances. They obviously had the penalty. You know, we had half chances, if you like, one or two, like in any big game, you get one or two big chances and we didn't really take them. Look, I think coming out of it, we'll take the draw. Obviously you wanna win, but still early days, but we do know ourselves we can be better. Especially in the final tour. It's obviously very easy for me to say a centre back. It's not the easiest thing to do to put the ball in the net, but yeah, with the players we have going forward, I think they know as well that it could be a lot more threatening, but we've had some good performances so far this season. Again, it's just turning the good performances into 3 points. But look, still early days, but we know now you can't say that for too much longer. We have to start performing and getting the points that we deserve.
Absolutely. Right, we're going to get straight into it. I have a couple of icebreaker questions for you. We've done this with everybody. It just helps to relax me and you. Be as honest as you can. Okay. All right? Happy with that?
Yeah.
What's your favourite sport outside football?
Tennis.
What's your favourite holiday destination?
Portugal.
This one always gets different answers. What's the best part of a fry?
Oh, sausages for me.
Tea or coffee?
Tea all day.
What way do you have your tea?
No sugar, a little bit of milk. I'm getting darker as I get older, I think.
That is an ace, definitely.
Yeah, tea all day. I'm not a coffee person at all.
Pub or nightclub?
Pub.
Drink of choice?
Blue Wicket or whiskey.
Just a bit of a jump there from one to the other. Who's the person you look up to?
My mum, I think, my whole life. She's been, a legend in my life for all of it. So, I'd look up to her.
What's been your worst moment in a Shells jersey?
It's a tough one. Most recently, probably, the cup final was tough. But I think in 2020, we lost a playoff. 1-0 up about 15 minutes ago to win the league. That was a killer.
Do you have any superstitions?
No, not really. No, just have a normal routine for game day, stick to that, and then go out and enjoy the game.
So what's the game day routine then? Because that probably is a bit of a superstition.
Yeah, like to go up in the morning, have my breakfast, I'd normally go on a little walk, just a little 10-15 minute walk, then you get to Tolka and it's game on, you're in the dressing room, normal stuff, wouldn't really probably give me boots a little clean in the dressing room with a few baby wipes and out to warm up.
You're not one of these certain sock has to go on first and to like shrug your jersey inside now. That's Ben Cleary dropping his phone in the background there.
No. Probably like same sports bra now I'd wear for probably most games coming into the season, to be honest. Little things like that, but no, definitely not the same socks.
None too major.
No.
What's been your best moment in the Shells jersey up to now?
There's been many, but I think the 2021 league win here was very special.
It was, that was a mental year.
That was mad.
Look, again, any player we've had on here, it's always been, I like to go back because I think it offers a lot. We're guilty supporters of just looking at the player in the jersey and maybe not looking at the person that's behind that player. So, first of all, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Dolphins Barn in Dublin A, in the flats. So my mum is from Fatty Mam, my dad was from the barn. And then, we moved to Dolphins Barn, so that's where I lived till I was about 8. And then we moved to Rialto, but I mean, the flats are here, and the house is at the back of the flats, basically. So I didn't really move.
Not much of
a move. No, but I loved growing up in Dolphins Barn.
When did football start?
My mum said the minute I could walk, I had a football by my side. There was no other competition with any other sports. It was just, she said, anytime she looked at me as a young girl, I had a football at my feet, and then obviously out in the flats all the time, out on the road with the boys and the sand pitch, just constantly as a young girl.
Was there anyone, any influence on you football wise, or did you just, was it just something you randomly picked up, like, yeah, from family or that, that was football or anything?
No, like, my mum played a little bit, she played a little bit of all sports, similar with my dad, but, like, nobody really that, no, my mum just said I'd come out, and I was just football mad, and then, obviously, out in the flats, on the road, as I said, she just said I loved it, like, you know, I would have been watching Liverpool and that from a young age, with my uncles and my dad and stuff, but nobody really that I kind of looked up to, and I just loved playing, being out constantly, you know, back then, no iPads, no internet, so...
Yeah.
You're
going to sound old, street football, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, making ourselves sound
the gates were galls in between the flats and stuff like that. That's the way I grow.
So what's your earliest memory? What's kind of the, if you think of being a kid and football, what's the first kind of thing you think of?
Yeah, probably in the sand pitch in Dolphins Park. That's where I grew up. That's where I played, in the blocks. You know, there was grass in between the blocks in Dolphins Park, and hoodies down, matches in there. My man said, like, could never get me in as a youngster. So in the sand pitch or in between the blocks, playing football constantly.
Is it still there?
The sandwich is still there, yeah, but it's kind of gone now. They've built like an old folks home on it and stuff like that. And
it's sad, isn't it? Like, looking back at stuff like that, such a big kind of, probably a big part of your upbringing.
Yeah, that's where I spent nearly every day, like with the lads. I was one of the lads growing up, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, the sandwich would have been.
So what's a young pair like in school?
Bit
be honest.
Yeah, a bit mad. I wasn't mad at the school now. Thank God for football. As they say, obviously very lucky to work with football now, and look, football is everything to me. I eat, breathe, sleep, so I'm very thankful for it. But I was never mad at the school. I obviously finished, I got my leaving cert, but it was more so just about football constantly for me.
So when did you move from, what was it you said, the sand pitch, was it?
It's called sand pitch, yeah, in Dolphins Barn.
So when did you move from that kind of jumpers for goalposts, casual kind of football, you call it, when did you move into a structured, like a team?
Yeah, so fighting my boys at the time, you know where the Lewis line is, mm-hmm. Now Rialto stop, that used to be an old canal with grass on it, so fighting my boys, had a team there, and as I said, I grew up with a lot of the boys in the flat, so like from very early I was one of them. I was just always pearl with the boys, and then they were all joining Fighting My Boys, and I joined the team with them, and I played with them until I was 15. And then I think when I was the age of 8, after playing about a year with the boys, Temple Oaks, someone from Temple Oaks spotted me playing with the boys and got me up to them. So in the summer I played at Temple Oaks, and then in the winter I was playing with the boys.
Did you notice growing up, like now there's girls teams everywhere, I'd say most if not all the football clubs in Dublin have girls teams as a kind of a separate thing under one banner. Like, did you ever, when you were a young kid playing with the boys, did you ever look at it and say, oh, I wish I could play for a girls team? Or was there ever thought like that? Or were you just so, just the norm for you?
Yeah, like, times have changed now. And you'll probably think, well, why did you play for Temple Oak? Because nowhere in Dublin 8 or Dublin 12 at the time had a girls team. So as I said, very early, you know, I'd obviously female friends from school and stuff, but I was just with the lads non-stop. I played with them. And even when my mum had told me that, you know, Temple Oak had come in for me, I didn't actually know that there was, you know, girls' teams, and people always speak about Ireland and stuff like that. I actually never grew up and aspiring to play for Ireland because that just wasn't there at the time. You know, there was no role models or publicity now that it's getting. For me, it was just going out training on a Tuesday, Thursday with the lads. That was it for me, or being out on the street every single day playing with them. That was.
It's funny now you're saying that. Like, we're not all that different today. It's not that big a gap, but I don't ever remember seeing women's football on the telly when I was a kid. No, yeah. I couldn't. Genuinely couldn't tell you. And now, like, you see, like, ex-Ireland internationals and stuff at games, and they're getting recognised for appearances and stuff, and you just,
yeah,
I don't know who they are. It's a terrible thing. Like, it's not all that long ago, really.
Yeah,
that,
no, no.
And there was just none of it anywhere. So, when you, what age were you when you moved to Temple Oak?
Probably about 8.
And that was still with a mixed team, or was that a girls' team?
No, that was fully girls' team, yeah.
That was fully girls.
Yeah.
So, did you, do you have a bit of an edge, do you think? Maybe physically a bit more of an edge? If I haven't played with the boys for
so long. Yeah, definitely did. I was a striker at the time, funnily enough. I've been getting deeper and deeper as years have gone on. But I just, yeah, I constantly played with the boys. So when I went actually up to the girls, I was flying. Like, my ma has loads of articles from years ago where, you know, Becca Cray at the time playing with Temple Oak. We were one of the, you know, I suppose good clubs at the time. We were flying at a few underage teams, and we were a really good team at the time. But yeah, like, when I went up to Temple Oak, it was a bit of a brace for me because I was just, I mean, so resilient after being playing with the boys for a few years. So yeah, it was a brace, but I loved it.
So playing with that all girls team. I remember, I'm fairly sure when I interviewed Rebecca, she mentioned as well that it was like a good, it was a strong old team. Yeah. Must have been winning stuff to beat the band, right?
Yeah, we were like loads of, as I said, old newspaper articles at home and tiny and little trophies and just, beating a lot of teams in cup finals and stuff, and obviously that makes it them, you're growing up.
Any of them in particular stick out? Any particular cup wins, or is there
two? Yeah, no, we played a cup final in the ring, in Sundry Park.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's actually great photos of in the ring. That was obviously a pitch at the time, and that kind of stands out to me because it was quite local for me. Obviously, you'd be doing a lot of travelling back then, and I remember even back then, like, we wouldn't have a car, like, so my mom literally brought us everywhere, and I constantly remember Hail Rail or Snow, she was at my pitch side, like, and it was lovely because I know she was buzzing at the time that I was in the ring and it was local and get a few of the family up and stuff, so that kind of memory would stick in.
That's a few times now you mentioned your mother already. How important do you think, even just as a young player, having a parent going to games and kind of supporting you, because it's not always a done thing a lot of the times, like, you just be sent on the bus or find your own way. How important do you think your mother's been just for keeping you and encouraging you, because not everyone is encouraged into it?
Yeah, and look, she's massive. I have three sisters and I don't think any of us would be where we are today without her. But as I said, I was probably eight or nine. It was lashing rain in Temple Hogue, I remember. And I can still see the image of her under an umbrella. And I mean, bucketing down probably with hail. And as I said, from the age of 8 to 18, I played at Temple Hogue. But obviously, till I was about mid-teens or teens, she would have travelled with me on bus. I said she didn't drive at the time, so I mean I wouldn't be here today without her. Like, I wouldn't have those experience of being able to play for Temple Hogue if she wasn't busing it with me. Where fighting my boys is quite local, so I could just walk the train and walk to the games up in the roundabout, but I needed her for Temple Hogue. So, and look, she was always very stand back, as she wasn't really, wouldn't get in my face, I wouldn't be, she'd just kind of stand back and watch and let me enjoy it. And I think that's really important, that just let the kids enjoy. That's where I got, and that's probably why I've loved and stayed in it for so long.
Everyone hates this question. Mark Hoyle visibly started to blush when I asked him this. When did you realise, I'm actually fairly good at this? Because usually people can go back to like a game or a season where they kind of go,
It was probably later for me than most. Like, you see a lot of the young girls coming up now. And as I said, when I was growing up, I played at Temple Hogue till I was about 18. I was in a few Leinster squads, Dublin squads. But again, there was no real... I never really heard of underage Ireland or senior Ireland at that time, and played at Temple Hogue. I was 18, moved to Catchings then for a season, and I've always kind of wanted to go to the States. I went to the States for 2 years, and then I came back, played a season with Raheny, and came back in and started to do well, really well then. The league started to build, and I think that's when you start to think, right, I'm at the level for League of Ireland and stuff. But throughout my teens, I just kind of played to enjoy it. As I said, I never really inspired to play for Ireland. Our League of Ireland didn't exist. It was when I was in the States the league came about, and then you come home and you think, right, can I get into it? And kind of started from there then.
Do you think it would have panned out differently for you if you were a kid coming through now with all the coaching and the opportunities? Would you have been a different player, do you think?
I think so, yeah. Well, I don't, you never know, do you? But I mean, I always say to young girls even, I don't think they actually realise what they have at the moment. It's only when we speak to them about playing league games in local parks for years, like, there was no publicity, no nothing, like the education, the nutrition side of things, the coaching, as you said, just the level of detail. Even, later on now in my career, like doing your coaching badges, all that stuff, like, that was not heard of years ago. So when you're picking those things up along the way, or what the young girls are getting now, obviously helps, like, but I wouldn't change a thing. Like, everything happens for a reason. And
I had a question there, and it was like, what goals did you have as a kid playing football? But you sound like you were just playing, you didn't really have a plan as such, just out play. Whereas now those younger girls can kind of something to aim for, there's a national league, there's underage setups. Did you ever, you mentioned a couple of squads, like representative squads, did you ever get into an Ireland squad underage?
And as I said, I'd grown up, the young girls now have all that at their, their feet, really. If they're a top player, that's there for them. But, I just didn't. And, look, there's pros and cons to that. I've seen, young girls come in and out of squads and it'd be detrimental to them. Where I had, my teens were just, I played football because I loved it. And then when I came back from the States, I came back at Christmas. I'd done like 3 years over there, and it was mid-season, and Rohini were in a top side. Noelle, Rebecca Cray, Rachel, Megan Campbell. And I remember Jerry McDermott texting me saying, look, come over and train, Sean Bourne's kind of thing. And I thought, no, I'm not coming in mid-season. And, you know, I was either deciding to not go back to the States, so my head was a bit wrecked about that. Anyway, I went up and trained, and 2 weeks in, and it wasn't, obviously, still very early. But I'll never forget, we went out to Piemont to play, and absolutely Baltic, bucket of snow. And I'm sitting on the bench thinking, what have I done here coming home, not getting into this team? It's an unbelievable team. Katie and stuff was in it, you know.
It's not until you look back through those squads and realise what team it was.
What have I done, you know? But it was funny, like 3 weeks in, we had a cup game midweek, and Ciara Grant was missing at work, and Sean said to me, look, I was playing the six at the time, and he said to me, you know, this is your chance to get in. And it's a mad story, like, cause I played that night, I was doing really well. I remember Megan Campbell was playing centre half behind me, and coming into the second half, and the UCD players broke her leg. And like, the game was abandoned, and I'm thinking, the one chance I get, I've got a half. But in fairness, Sean was really impressed that night, and I played every game since for him. But that season, there was, you know, I remember Sean had said to me, like, you're really close to getting a call up. That was probably one of the best seasons I played. But kept hearing, you know, that you'll get a call in. And Sue actually rang me and said about going to award student games. And I just couldn't. I was only home, you know, I think it was about $5,000 to go or something. I was like, can't go type of thing. But Sean kept saying, look, they're watching you, keep doing what you're doing. But that call never came. But it wasn't something that I dwelled on. I didn't think, you know, the following week after I heard of the interest, I wasn't thinking, where is it? Again, my mindset is always just to play and enjoy it. I loved playing with Rohini at the time, and that's obviously everyone would love to play for their country, but it's also a very, very small pool of players. Even to be mentioned in that light, I was very humbled by it. But as I said, I never got bogged down on it. It was just next training session for me, next game, let's go type thing.
Right, so rewind a little bit. You've mentioned America a couple of times. Mm-hmm. When does that become like a realistic kind of option? Because it was probably similar to like the growth of the league here, in that like it's common enough now for girls and boys to go to America, or for that to be a goal. If my own friends are over there coaching and playing, was that a common thing then?
Yeah.
To go across, that was kind of the next step for you. When did it come about? When was the first mention of it?
Probably when I finished school, I went into Clost Ida. So, you know, that course was based around the scholarships with Danny and Jim. And I think I had one or two offers at the end of that and didn't take her up that time. And there was a female FOSS course. I just did every course that had football. Seriously, that's what I did. But I went to a female FOSS course for a year. Loved it. Like, we're doing classes every morning, training with Harry Kenny and Thomas. Brilliant session. So I did that for a year, and then got an offer to go over to Kansas, believe it or not, with an Irish coach. And I thought, you know what, I'm ready to go now. And around that time period, we were all kind of looking to go to the States. You heard, you know, it wasn't really about college for me, it was about experience in America. Yeah. The women's game was huge over there, so I thought, why not? I have nothing to lose, don't really know what I want to do other than football, so why not give it a go? Like,
and what age have you been there? 18?
No, I was actually a bit older. I was 20, 21. Because I had the 2 years of the courses where I decided not to go.
Yeah, so you didn't come straight. So was there, like, when that offer comes in officially, is it just, I'm going? Was there any kind of, I don't know if I can leave my man, my family? Or was it just, because I know everyone is different in that scenario. Some people overthink it. Other people are just like, here, I'll just go. Yeah. See what happens. What way were you
leaving? It was a bit of both. Like, you never really want to leave your family, your friends, and what you have going on. But as I said, like, the Women's National League wasn't up and running then. So it was just a normal league. There was nothing really keeping me here. So I thought, well, why not give it a bash? I was moving miles away. I ended up lasting about 3.5 years. And then you kind of come home and you think, oh my God, what am I going to do when the league is starting? And that's where FAI, all that sort of stuff starts to snowball for me then.
So what was the difference when you went over? Like, standard-wise and just the facilities, was it just like back
home? In Kansas, I went over, it was like the hottest summer in 40
years. It's young enough,
like, that's typical me now coming over. But just our physicality, they're all athletes. Like, technically we were there, but it took, like, what I was blessed. Look, not everyone's experience is great, but when I went to Kansas, you know, we one of the best groups I've ever been involved in. I still, I've only just been with the girls there a few months ago, seeing them in Colorado. We're still best of mates, they come and see me and that. So I was just very lucky with the girls we had. And fortunately for us, it was only a 2 year school. If it had been a 4 year school, I don't know if I'd ever came home. But with 2 years over there, but yeah, like, the thing you go over, I've never done a tougher pre-season. I thought I was a track athlete, we were running that much. But it really changed my mindset into Jesus, if you are a lot fitter, because technically we had it, so it just took me a few weeks to get used to the heat, get fitter, and then when that started to come, you start to play well. And then after Kansas, another Irish coach came in, and I moved to Atlanta then for a year.
Were you a midfielder at that stage?
Yeah, still. I was six. Yeah.
So a six, you're doing a lot of moving around, tackling the heat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I was a six at the time.
So your first year college football, how did it go? Like on the pitch wise, were
It was really good. Like first few weeks, you know, they're rotating a lot with the heat and stuff, and then obviously when it comes to the finer end of things, I was playing a lot. And as I said, there was about 11 internationals at the time. I was actually the only Irish, but a few English, a few Scottish, so I was very lucky, and then a good mix of Americans. Went really well. We won our local Juco League and stuff like that, and I think we just missed out on nationals. But the 2 years in Hutch, you know, I loved it. No regrets going there. The biggest regret is that I had to leave and leave the group, and we all had to kind of scatter. And I went to Atlanta with one of the other girls. She was from England, Alicia, and yeah, we continued then.
So what did you study while you were there?
Sports management.
Was that hard? Because I know, isn't there a bit of pressure on you, like, to kind of keep
You have to have your grades and stuff. And like, as I said to you, I wasn't the best. I didn't go over thinking I want a degree in this. I was actually just thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be training every day. I'm going to be playing twice a week in college football, Wednesday and Saturday. I'm living the dream, like, you know. And probably look back, I probably could have took classes and that more serious. And when I went to Atlanta, I actually came home in the summer, and I played with the summer league Rohini at the time, and tore me groin. So I went to Atlanta injured, and I look back at that year and probably think I probably should have redshirted. So I was just all over the place because I was in and out with injury, and then that's when that Christmas I decided.
So redshirted, is that your part of the squad, but you're not registered to play?
Exactly.
So you're just training?
Just training and getting prepared for the following year, where I'd missed the first few. You know, what's ruthless over there, like I'd flown in, I'll never forget it. And obviously I was at Juco, and this was a university. I think I left Ireland at like 6 a.m. and got there like a day later, and you're flown in and you're thrown to a little box room. It's like, go get your bed and go get you, and you're up at 6 a.m. for fitness tests, and it's like you're just a very small fish in a big pond then. And I'll never forget, the next morning I grew up and like bleed tests, you know, laps around the campus, and I was riddled with, like, I tore my groin completely for Heaney, but because it was my first day, I was like, you know, I'm not pulling out this. And never forget sitting on the medical bed, and one of the girls walked by and was like, injured already, like, and that really got to me because I'd never shy away my pre-season and stuff. But I look back at that year, like, some good spells, like I got in for a few weeks and the Irish coach really liked me, but my groin just didn't let up. I was in for a few weeks out, and then Christmas came and I was like, do you know what, the league had started, there was a good buzz, and I was thinking, you know, will I go back for it? And I just felt right to stay at home. I don't know, and I was really scared when I got home because I had nothing really laid out for me.
You got your degree while you were over there, did you?
No.
Did you finish it?
No. Yeah. So that was scary.
So you were literally coming home kind of nothing.
Yeah.
And I know from experience of people, like, if you come home, you literally have nothing.
Yeah, it was a big call. And I'll never forget getting home, and you obviously enjoy your Christmas. And look, the college wanted me to go back, the coach wanted me to, but they were doing everything to get me back and to finish it. And I just don't know. I think everything happens for a reason. And obviously the first few weeks, you're like, what I do? That's when I decided then go over and train with Sean, which was the best decision I could have made. And look, I worked in the Board Flanagan for years, so every time I came home at Christmas or somewhere, I worked in the pub. So I kind of had that, but no, I didn't want to be a bar girl or a lounge girl for forever.
Yeah.
So there was a few times I sat at home thinking, Jesus, what am I going to do here? And that's when a course came up, Stephen Rice, all that. And yeah, he had a great impact on me then to get me where I am today, I suppose.
So the league, you mentioned the year you came back, the league kind of, was that the very first year of the National League?
I think he mounted one of the year before. And then I came into kind of the second year.
That was, I think the first year was only like 16 or something.
Something like that.
So must have been a bit of a shock for you to come home, where when you left you were just playing in the smaller league, I suppose you call it, and all of a sudden,
like,
you come
a local
home
league,
and home, and next thing is this National League. And were teams playing in stadiums and stuff at that stage, or was it still kind of
not a lot? Like, we were playing in Morton.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of a stadium towards some of the grounds. Mm. We were playing in Piemont. I'm trying to think of the other teams at the time, but no, I wouldn't have been in League of Ireland grounds at the time, no.
And how did you adapt to the football, just the football part of it? Because obviously you've been at a good level in America, you came home. Did you struggle to kind of fit back into it? Was it that much different to the American way of playing?
I came back a lot fitter. Came back a lot fitter because the 3 years in America, you know, even when I wasn't in the States and I was at home, it just turned you into some sort of, you just knew you had to be in good nick. So I came back fit. My own thing was my own self-doubt, walking into a squad of that size, the people that were in it. It's just a quality team. So it was me more so getting over that. And then once I settled in and got around the girls again, I was grand, and once you get into the team, then it helps.
As you were saying there about the bit of self-doubt and three cup wins on the spin, probably helps put that to bed a little bit, does it for you?
I think everyone has a bit of self-doubt, you know, but I've always said it, every year, even coming to Shells when I'm captain, I never take my jersey for granted. I always have that mentality of nobody's taking my jersey. I've been around the game a long time, things can change very quick. So I think that kind of self-doubt and never settling is a good thing. That's the way I've always kind of been as a player.
So did it help you coming back to like a successful team? Because you could have came back and like there was a big gulf in that league that year. There was kind of a couple of teams at the top and everyone else was kind of miles back. Do you think it helped you came into a successful team? And you obviously knew some of the girls from beforehand. Would it have been a different experience, you think, if you just got landed into new players, new staff, new everything?
Yeah, it could have been. I could have, like, as I said, I could have went back to the, you know, the local teams or something easier if I wanted. And fairness to Jerry McDermott, like, he really believed in me. I probably would have sat at home and waited till the season was out. Not that I wanted to do that, but it was more so, oh, I don't know if I'm going to get in. But he really pushed me, you know, to go over. And then you go over, I knew some of the girls, Rach, Becca, Noelle, the Katie's, the Megan's, Neem, like some squad, Callow, Mary Waldron, Megan Campbell, it was just Kira Grant. Like,
I look back through the 11s,
that's how good they were, like, you know.
I look back through the 11s of that Raheny team playing at the finals. It is mad when you look at it. Yeah. Like, it's the level that group was at was just crazy. One of those cup finals you scored in, I think, didn't you?
Did I?
Yeah, I think
for
you
Raheny?
Did. Yeah. Unless my research is wrong, could well be.
My memory.
I'd say I'm probably wrong because I'm sure you would have remembered scoring in the cup final. No?
I probably should have, yeah, but I don't think I did. A lot of them were in the Aviva.
Yeah. That's.
A lot of them were in the Aviva. I only remember Noelle scoring, Katie scoring. I don't know if I did.
Gordon actually told me you did, but yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, apparently you did.
Jesus, if I did, and I was getting really old.
Too many headers, maybe.
Yeah.
You mentioned their cup finals in the Aviva, and look, we were there a couple of years ago with the men's team for the final, and it was an amazing experience for us, just as supporters being there. What's it like just walking out of that tunnel, like, in that, because it's such a vast arena, like, it's not until you are on the pitch you realise how big it is around you, and what's that feeling like? Like, what's your mindset in that tunnel, waiting to come out, play a cup final in front of family, friends, RTE cameras, the whole lot.
That's incredible. Like, before states, as I said, those cup finals were in local parks.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you come home, it's the Aviva, all of a sudden it's live on TV, and I don't think any of us will forget Air Force One. It's just an international stadium, isn't it? And you're walking out, your family and friends are there. And, like, obviously the debate in the most recent years is the crowd, the atmosphere, but, like, that doesn't really matter when you're playing on that pitch. It's just, it's quality, like, you know.
I was going to ask you that. There's chatter around that all the time, that, like, it shouldn't be in the Aviva because you can nearly hear the echo coming back at you. And I know one of the cup finals you played in, the cup final, the men's cup final, obviously came on after, and that wasn't a particularly well-supported final either. But you, as a player, from a player point of view, it must be very hard to say, oh no, it should probably be played in Tala.
Like, nothing beats you at National Stadium. Like, obviously, the mess of the men's, because the early kickoff, I remember one of the years we went into extra time at Penos, and as the Penos were going on, the men's were coming out and warming up.
Yeah, they were down the far end, yeah, I remember.
Like,
yeah.
But at the time, like, there was a lot of dramatics about that, but as a player, I didn't even notice that they were behind me. I was more focused on, and in fairness, because the kickoffs are so close towards the end of every game, the extra time is brilliant because all the other fans are coming in, and that you create that atmosphere. Like, nothing will be playing in the Aviva, but I think the last few years in Tala have been special. The support we've got and stuff. I'll never forget the 2021 when we walked out with the flares and the banner. Like, some of that stuff is stuff I never thought I'd ever see in the female game. Never mind for us having a part of it.
While we're on it, it's probably the perfect time to. The last couple of years, in this club in particular, and look, it's easy to say because we're involved here, but it's caught on here for. Obviously, the success on the pitch helps. The characters that are involved in the squad definitely help with it. Say, Talca Park and the support you lended to that all helped gather a bit of momentum. But what's it like coming out here on a Saturday when, like, it's no disrespect to other clubs, but they don't really get a crowd. It's still that same kind of, you know, family and friends are there watching. But, like, to come out and the Ballybock end there, and we won't mention Pyro now, but, like, there's colour, there's flags, there's banners everywhere. what's that like? Yeah. Just on a weekly basis now at this stage.
It's been amazing. Like, Talk is home to us. I think we won, Air Force League title with Shells 2015-16, and then we'd like a 4 or 5 year gap where, as I said, we lost the playoff. We were under Dave Bell and Danny, probably 2 or 3 points away from winning the league during that period, and then 2021 happens in that mad year. And I actually think that year is the turning point for the club. I remember the P-Mount game here, the 4-3. I think that was a real game that captivated everybody's hearts around the club. That, you know, even on social media after that game, kept seeing people saying, get out and support this team, they're worth it, that type thing. And I think it just snowballed, like that game, the late winner, the celebrations.
That game started my, because it was one of the first games I'd been to here, and I brought my little one and my girlfriend and all came, and it was mayhem. It was like a Friday night, and I don't mean that as a slight, but it felt like the same thing. It felt like it was all one. That was, I think that was the game, was it Jesu went in a mad celebration at the end, jumped up on the rail as the whole lot.
Well, scored literally the last kick of the game. It was some game, 4-3, both teams giving everything. Like, talk about rivalries at the time, it was the biggest. But I felt that was a turning point, I really did. And obviously throughout that 2021 season, you know, we had the late winner against Boas and then the final game of the season, but as you mentioned, like, save Talca Park. And obviously when we heard about that, like, the first thing you kind of think of is why are they getting rid of it? And you don't really, like, you're kind of told as players, well, don't really get involved, and then you're like, no, we want to get involved. Because for me, Shane Dawson, all years, I was starting to get to know everybody, and then you realise actually it's home to us, but it's actually much more to people when you get to know them. It's like family who are here, family who are gone, and then you think, Jesus, this is really touching. And you're like, we want to be a part, we want to help save. Obviously, I was part of that night, the Save Talk partner. But I actually think that year, Air Football did their best piece of trying to save it. And I've always said to the girls, if we've 1% help in saving Talk Park that year, and that was the best thing you'll ever do. But I actually think the football games, on TG Cahar, the excitement of them, because, you know, if we'd have lost Tolka, the two teams, the two men seemed to be playing Daly Mount, where were the two women? We were probably going to go back to the AOL. And those games, you know, the 4-3, the late one against Boas, the game of the season against Wexford to win it, the dramatics of the trophy being in P-Mount, like, they deserve to be in grounds like Tolka. But I do think Air Football actually had a big impact in the campaign as well. So then to win it on the final night, the way, do you know, like, there's mad stories that year. I don't know if you knew about the, obviously, the week before with the DLR game, the P-Mount game.
No, you're going to enlighten us now. See, you're going to let people in on something
that knows about that. Like, I don't know, it was probably the third game out from the season we were playing in Cork. I remember it. It's just, there's some mad stories to that year. But playing in Cork, and a player came up to me and sat beside me and said, and obviously, like, this is no harm to anybody, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but said, look, the club have obviously agreed to let P-Mount play DLR in 2 weeks' time, or next week, for the game that could win them the league, like, you know. And I just smoke him out of my ears. I was thinking, like, what are we doing here? Like, what? I couldn't even, we were playing Cork that day, and thank God we won, but I couldn't even concentrate on the game because I had heard this. Because for me, as captain, the girls are amazing, obviously the staff. We give everything every single week for teams not to get anything at all. Not to get a point, us obviously to win, but we want people dread coming here to make it as tough as possible. And then the club had, you know, said yes to P-Mount and DLR to play in Tolka, and P-Mount won, they were going to win the league. And obviously after the game, I went running up to someone and I was like, what's going on here? And look, obviously I got a bit heated, and then they were kind of like, look, we actually didn't know it meant that much. And I kind of said, look, we give everything. Can you imagine if P-Mount had won it and they're running around Tolka, they're sitting in their dressing room, right? And it continues. The club are like, what are we going to do here? And I'm like, I don't care what you do. If I have to sit in the middle of Tolka Park that day, it's not happening. Like, when it's not. So obviously a lot of back and forth. And then obviously Mark, I obviously work in the FAI, great respect for Mark and what they've done for the league. And me and Mark had like a tough convo, because we both had our own sides. Like, what I was saying, look, we give everything not to lose or anything in Tolka. We don't want them in our dressing room winning. And he was kind of saying, look, it was obviously for TG Cahar, you know, P-Mount couldn't.
So that's what it was. It was just optics. It was, they didn't want the trophy lift.
P-Mount couldn't host TG Cahar because they didn't have a stand. And I'm like, you know, that's no offense, that's not our problem. Like, and look, me and Martin, he's like, you know, we could lose TG Carr here, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, anywhere but Talca, there has to be another ground. And like, there was a long convo, the girl off the phone, I'm thinking, you know, this is tough. But anyway, it ends up, doesn't happen. They get some sort of stand for Piemont. And I'll never forget, we were playing Bowes that day, we beat them, and I'm at a gig that night. And you're kind of checking, just thinking Piemont's going to beat DLR and Piemont, you know what I mean? And you see it's nil all at half time. And funny enough, at the gig, I bumped into Gav White. And he's like, no, still nil-nil. And I'm like, yeah, long way to go. Just, and then I'm coming out of the gig and you check and it ended nil-all. And then it's only a few days later you realise they'd missed the penalty and stuff. And then you're thinking, right, going to the last weekend, it's going to the wire now. They were playing Galway, we were playing Wexford. And funnily enough, like that week of training was probably the worst week of training we've had. Monday night we trained for 40 minutes behind the goal. Wednesday times are changed, girls missed. It was a mess. And we were training in Grange Gorman on the Friday night, and I remember some of the parents and us walking out as a group of girls thinking, imagine Galway actually be Piemont. We were always kind of laughing and joking and not thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving the house on the Saturday into Talca. I bump into my brother-in-law. He's like, you never know. And I'm like, oh, stop, will you? We'll just... And I just said to the girls that night, look, forget about everything else. We do our job. And then look, what we experienced on the pitch when the goals are going in the other game is something I'll never forget. It's probably one of the best nights I've ever had here.
Yeah, it was mad because I remember there was like people shouting into the stand and the stand were shouting back out, giving score updates. And I wasn't here. I had the little one, so I couldn't even get down. And TG Carr had like a split screen kind of thing on.
Yeah, it was supposed to be unbelievable.
Ah, it was just, it was incredible.
But the game itself, we're winning 2-0, I think. We're cruising. And for having such a disaster of a week of training, we played unbelievable. Like, I remember, I think Adele Kennedy was in goal for Wexford that night. And look, we just played so well. And I'll never forget coming in at half time, Jess Sue comes running over to me and I'll start screaming at me that the Piemont game's 2-2. And I didn't even know they were 2-0 up. And I'm like, Jess, forget about another half to go. You come out, I think we go 3-0 up or 3-1. And then, like, we're on the pitch and I just start hearing, you know, bangings of cheers. And I'm kind of looking, going, what's going on here? Like, you know, you haven't got a clue on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as shells, Wexford start coming on top then. And then I heard just another really, really loud noise, and I kind of looked over to Kieran King to say, what's going on here? And he just put 4-2 to Galway up. And like, I would never get like lightheaded, or my legs were starting to go from beneath me, because we're 3-1 up. And then obviously a few minutes later, Wexford score, go 3-2. And then some hilarious stories, like I'm literally pulling Kylie Murphy, telling her like, stop playing. Literally, Sinead Taylor comes running on, I'm like, I'll buy a pint for a year, just do nothing. They're losing, we're winning. And they're like, bro, we can't stop playing, like, we can't stop. And then, look, it's just, I turned to Chloe Mustaki at one stage. I said, we were 5 minutes away and win the league. And she kind of, she hadn't got a clue. She just thought the fans were cheering for the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, are Piemont losing? And I was like, they've lost, like. And Chloe's face, I'll never forget. I remember thinking, Jesus Christ, should I have told her? Like, because everyone's heads was, but look, just to see that out and the feeling of it, it's just amazing. So,
obviously, the club changed from, like, it merged, Raheny and Shells kind of merged, but at that stage it was still Shells Ladies. I always remember that coming, like all the scores on Shells Ladies, and then it changed and it was just Shells, just across the board. What, did you feel a difference, like as a captain of the team, did you feel at that point, something is different here, like something's building, because it's, we're kind of together as one. Did you feel before that it was like the women's team was here and the men's team was here? Did it feel that way?
Yeah, it was very separated. Like, we played in Morton, obviously, when we merged then, we moved to the AOL, and it was like, you wouldn't have really seen the lads, you wouldn't have really had a clue what was going on at the club, if I'm honest. And then when, as you said, you get rid of the ladies, you come under the one banner, you move to Talca, now you're really starting to feel part of it. And then obviously when you're competing and you're going for trophies, that obviously helps the fans. I mean, how they've made us feel as a group over the last few years, even, as I said, some of the stuff, the banners, the flares, the crowds, the stickers, I'll never forget some of the girls seeing themselves on stickers for the first time. Little things that we honestly never really, and I actually think we're the standard setters for that in the league, and people could say what they want about other clubs and stuff. We've done that. And, you know, it's only when I think we look back as a group of players and we retire, try not to get bogged down on it now, because I want more. You know, I always want more as a group, and I'm not going to look, but definitely think the club have been standard setters in that, and like the fans have made us feel part of it, made us all feel like we mean something to them and stuff, like that's very special.
Is that, like, you mentioned there when you were a kid, you were just playing football. You weren't really, there was no goal, there was no end game, it was just go out and play. Like, it must be a mad feeling now, even, like, if you just walk past the Riverside, like, you're being stopped and you're, like, what does that feel like to go from, like, that a young girl where there was no girls playing football on telly, there was definitely no girls on stickers at that stage. Like, what's that feeling like just being even noticed around the place, I suppose? Because you're probably the most recognisable Shell's face there is now. For so long, yourself and Luke were obviously the two captains, and I counted there, you're on more than half of the posters outside, and, like, is there a pressure with that? Does a pressure come with being the captain of it, or is it just water off your back?
Yeah, look, I think the years we weren't winning titles and stuff, I felt the pressure. You just do, because I actually, when we win things or when we lose, it's the girls I feel for. When we're winning things, I'm obviously chuffed for the girls, and that's where 2021, I felt like the bricks were off the shoulders, and, you know, but as you said, like, when you walk around Talca, we're all noticed and stuff, like, but this, the club has been a constant in my life for the last 9 or 10 years. I've probably given every inch of my soul and my body to the club, to the role, but to be noticed is still a bit mad. And a lot of people always say, look, you won't really realise what you've done, and as I said to you, till you've gone. And sometimes it is a bit mad when people are, as I said, like, calling you for photos or autographs. And as you said, like, when we're walking around Talca on Friday night or through town, even a few times you've been called. I've been with some of my friends who wouldn't be mad into football, and you're called and they're like, they're Shelbourne lads, like, you know, or just little things like that that you never thought. As you said, when I was a young girl, I just played because I loved it. And as I said, now you feel like you're just part of something so big that you never really could have imagined.
Your role as the captain, and, like, it's a young players' league. It's probably fair to say at the moment, like, the amount of young girls coming through with playing the National League is incredible at the moment. Do you feel a pressure in that to be a role model for those type of girls coming through? Or is it just a case of, if they're going to come and play with the first team here, just fit in?
Yeah, no, I just love bringing them along. I love to see young girls coming up from the academy, and I think I've always said it in interviews, like, when they come into the dressing room, they're treated like a senior player, and I don't mean that in a harsh way. I mean that out of best respect for them, because they deserve it. They're good enough. I'm very one, like, one, if they're good enough, forget about age. And we've seen that over the years with all the youngsters that have come up and played, and honestly, they help us as much as we help them, because their fearlessness and just going out and playing, sometimes as a senior player you can overthink, or some of the young girls wouldn't get the rivalries or stuff that has happened previously, and they kind of give us that sense of freedom. So I just love bringing them along, even now when they're training during the week in the academy and you're saying hello to the 17s and 19s, you know, that's what I love. And I love when they come into the dressing room, they've come up from the club, I get great joy in that. And that's where it was great, it was two lads coming in, Owen and Rory, because they've been a part of it, they know it. It's really important for a young girl at the club to inspired to play for the seniors, because like that, I never really had that, so they have that, and just kind of want them to play for the club. And as I said, it's even better when they're coming up through the academy. But as I said, yeah, when they come into the dressing room, you know, speak up, be yourself, and that's actually just me giving them the highest of respect, because they deserve it. Like,
playing, as you mentioned, when you came home with Raheny and stuff like that, there's still so many of the players playing now in the team that you played with when you were that young. Doesn't happen very often. Does that make it easier, do you think? Like, those tough times you mentioned, the Barron spell where it didn't really win anything, is it easier when you're kind of pals with everybody, and, you know, is it easier to maybe move on because everyone is just pals, you're kind of, it's arm around the shoulder type stuff? Or is there more pressure, and because you are buddies, it's a strange dynamic. I know it myself, from, like, playing with your friends can be difficult. Sometimes it's easier if they're off to the side, but I'd say those relationships with the likes of Noel and Rebecca, they've probably been tested a little bit over the years in games.
Yeah, but I think it's positive, to be honest. Like, honestly, I'm nothing without the Rachels, the Noels, you know, I can go to them with anything and everything, and we've been there for each other through, as I said, the times where we weren't winning things, to the times, the biggest thing for us every year is we compete for everything, and that's a very proud thing, and that's the mindset we always want as a group. But no, I think it's always nice if you're pals, but I'm very much so, like, person first, and how people feel in the dressing room, we want them to feel part of it. Everybody is as important as each other. If you've, you know, played once, not played at all, or playing every week, that's really big for the environment we try to set in the dressing room. Obviously, it's a little bit easier, you can have your little rants with your friends, and But look, I'm not without, as I said, especially now Rach is vice captain. She's been my rock really through the ups and the downs, and definitely nothing without her. And then Noelle as well. Obviously Noelle just loves the football stuff, and you will get a chat over here and there. She will have, the last two seasons she really, you know, you can get opinions out of her, before she's probably just more football related, but let her, because she's special, so you'd be just like, you stick to the football stuff, and everyone's a bit different, where Rachel is my go-to, she's, you know, and even Megan as of late, she's come into that role, and look, last year, obviously we won the double together, that year is really special, isn't it, like, obviously having to win two in a row, and you get to share those memories, and you're looking back at the photos, and I remember there's a great photo down in Wexford of me, Rachel and Noelle, that was really nice, and you have those memories forever, you can look back on them. But even last year, like with the group, it's probably one of the proudest years I've had with a group of players. I know people probably think that's a bit mad because we didn't win anything, but obviously with everything that happened at the start of the season, you know, so much going on in the background, even the fact that we're competing, and you look back at the league, but probably if you look at one or two games, you think, oh, we've got 3 points there. As I said, look, I'm sure other teams would say that. And then you get to a cup final and, all right, you know, penalties are penalties. And I'm a firm believer that someday it's just your day, as harsh as it is. Over the years, I've just learned that you could be, you know, really good. And I just thought, look, the penos. But very proud of the girls last year. You know, lots of new girls came in, a lot of stuff going on as well in the background. And the fact that we're still competing for both trophies was incredible. I was super proud of them.
This year feels, from the outside looking in, feels like another huge change, because went from all that experience with Noel and Joey to Owen and Rory, and like for you as the captain, Noel had been the manager for as long as he had and had had that success. Is there a worry when the management team changes that, oh, are we still going to be able to, you know, compete at the top level?
No, I always believe in the group, I always believe in the club. I always feel like over the years we've lost big players to abroad, to England, to Scotland, and no matter who we lose or what happens, we're always there or thereabouts, and that's just what we try to create fairly early on, you know, in pre-season. Look, people can say Noel and Joey, in fairness to them, they've brought silverware back. We had, you know, when Noel came in, the standards were raised. He brought in the likes of Dave O'Connor, Joey Kieran. We won 2 titles under him, 3 cup finals. I mean, that's a very successful period. And obviously the two lads then step away, and it's like the opposite, like they're finishing their career, and then the two lads are coming in, they're starting their career. And obviously I'd known Rory in his role at the academy. I'd met Owen once or twice, and very ambitious, young, organised. And for me as captain, they've been a breath of fresh air, because I feel even early on since pre-season, I can just focus now on being the captain and playing, and that's just true to their good detail, their organisation, their planning, their sessions are brilliant, their ideas, you can see with their formation, they're trying new stuff. And so I don't think you ever worry. They're two great lads, and you want to do well for them, like, and that's where I think we're probably a little bit frustrated at the moment, because we want to get them the results that we think we deserve, but still a long way to go. I've no doubt about it that we'll turn it around, like.
So we've gone full circle. We started talking about the game against Rovers on Saturday. We've come all the way back around to present day. Now is the most important bit of this. All right, it's your teammates. So, I can't let you away with giving 2 or 3 answers. One person, that's it. That's all you get. All right.
I'm usually brutal at this. Like, you know, I did one before in League of Ireland. And something, and I showed up the train the following week, I can't believe you didn't say me there. My mind just went blank, and I got it so wrong. So hopefully I do a little bit better on this.
Well, there'll be plenty of times for people to get back at you here with answers as well, so just keep that in mind. So, who's the quickest, pace-wise?
Who's the quickest? Mm. Oh, for our age, Gemma is a flyer.
You've started off now already.
No, but come here, I remember a few weeks ago in pre-season, right? Come here, she's one of the experienced ones with me, we've known that. She rocketed through a box to box and screamed, you know, I'm 34, I've won this, you know, running by all the youngsters. Like, she's incredible, the speed of her. I'm trying to think of anyone else, but Gemma would be up there. Rebecca Devereaux is obviously quick as well, but I think Gemma, when you let her get off, she's a flyer.
Who's the slowest?
Ah, probably me. But thank God I'm a good mind, I can read well.
Who's the most intelligent?
Oh, Jesus, most intelligent. Some of the youngsters, I'm sure, are really intelligent, but I don't know how intelligent they are. Probably Jess Gargan, really good job, doing well, so I'll give it to Jess.
We used to ask least intelligent, but we're not allowed anymore. Darren Cleary, ooh, banned that question.
Yeah, we banned her for that one.
Who's a liability on a night out?
Just a few. liability on a night out. I'm trying to look around the dressing room now in my mind. Liability on a night out. Oh, I'm trying to go through the team.
There has to be someone that you go, oh no, here we go, she's off.
Depends how many drink they have, so there's different levels, you know what I mean?
But well, who's at the extreme high end of liability?
Well, Rachel and Gemma are out because they're non-drinkers, so they're the easy ones to get rid of. Noelle can be. Jess Gargan styles a bit, yeah, a bit of both.
So Noelle or Jess, can't let you wear them too.
Oh, I'm trying to think of anyone else too. Who's on her wings? Oh, Christy's a bit messy as well when she gets a bit drunk. Oh, I'll go away. When she's sunglasses drunk, I'll go on a well.
I don't want to know.
She'll know what I mean by that.
Who looks at themselves in the mirror the most?
The first person that came to mind was Alex. She'll kill me, but...
There you go. That's the best way. A first name that pops in, that's always the one. Who's the manager's pet? You can't say yourself, you're a captain.
I was just going to say, you'd probably say me.
No.
But manager's pet at the moment, under the new lads.
Yeah. Well, hang on, I'll go back, because you obviously had somebody in mind from the previous staff.
No, I didn't, but I'm just trying to think, I'll go by this year.
Right, go with this one, yeah.
Manager's pet. Still hard, manager's pet. Nothing really, like...
It's alright, that's good. Yeah, no, that's a solid one.
So, anyone's manager's pet, I think.
That's all right.
All the little youngsters, they obviously, you know.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
But that's not an answer.
No.
But
give it a bit of time. Somebody, I'm sure, will slide into that role eventually. If a name comes to your mind for the end,
yeah,
don't be afraid to throw it in. Who's the angriest?
Oh. Me. Depends. It's a few of us. Monday night, you play small side games. I tell you, there's no friends in that. Yeah, we do the odd bullying going home, but yeah, I'd say I'm very competitive in games and in training games as well.
That. Who's the funniest?
Our Alex Gass.
Who's the best trainer?
Best trainer?
Mm. If you're playing those small side games, who do you want?
Maggie. Team? Maggie's quality. Good trainer.
Is that work rate or just ability, everything?
Yeah, both.
So she's the first.
I always love when you think you have Maggie in your team, like, right, yeah.
We have a chance.
Yeah.
One staff member that you definitely beat in the game of head tennis.
Head tennis? All them.
All them?
All them. No better.
All wearing with that career behind them.
Yeah, true. Yeah. All would give you a good battle. Yeah, he would. Yeah.
So, Andy, you're saying any of them? You'd beat any of them?
I'd give them a good bash. We all would.
We'll have to get one's opinion on that. Who's the worst trainer?
The worst trainer? Oh, that's a hard one, isn't it? I hope so. Worst trainer. It's a difficult one.
Well, we might come back to that at the end.
Yeah, that's
who do you not want to be stuck beside on the bus to Cork?
Who
do you not? Like, is there somebody you could picture to sit beside and you go,
Megan.
Oh, Megan.
Sure. Like, my earphones in, and she always sits beside me, she does it. I can have a me period with you, so she'll sit with me for a few minutes. She'll kill me for that.
Who's the best dressed?
Best dressed? Ah, Rach. A lovely clobber.
Who's the worst dressed?
Worst dressed? You're gonna get me battered.
That's the point. See, we don't have to worry about the reaction to this in training, you do.
Worst dressed? Just not my style. Oh, this is hard. Megan, I'm going back again.
You have a penalty to save your life. Who do you want to take it?
Penalty to save my life. I'd go Alex.
Alex Cabinet?
Yeah, I know well. Yeah.
Now, who are the ones we missed?
The pet.
Manager's pet. You have to give us somebody. That worst trainer.
Worst trainer? That's a hard one. Worst trainer? Like, what's that mean? Just saunters around and...
Yeah, or just... bad loser, whatever pops into your head. You know, when I said worst trainer, what did you think of? What did you think of it?
Someone who just can't be arsed, bothered. We don't have many of them.
I'm trying to think of a word that's a bit more diplomatic. Not lazy, but a bit blasé.
Lethargic.
There's the teacher.
Everyone, like, we wouldn't have a group because we'd be very quickly to get on to them. I'm sure everyone certain nights, but...
Right, well then we'll change it. You was trained last night, didn't you?
Trained last night, yeah.
Anyone you can think of there had a bit of a nightmare?
Last night?
really prodding you here for an answer,
yeah, I know. Last night, Nadine actually had a nightmare last night. She was one of her outside players and killing us.
Just go fight for us.
Yeah.
Manager's pet. Mum, we're nearly there.
Manager's pet.
Nearly there.
Everyone would say me naturally because I'm always chatting to them
and
stuff.
But I've said this here before, that's our job. You're the captain, that's what you're supposed to do.
Manager's pet. One of the young girls, I'd have to say, maybe.
Very diplomatic.
Probably harsh, yeah.
Very diplomatic. Pearl, thanks a million for giving up your evening. We really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. Pleasure.
And best of luck on Saturday.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.